Sometimes they want jurisdiction, or they want trusteeship because they want governmental jurisdiction over the land, because they want to have native governmental control over the land to govern their affairs there. But that also can be done directly without necessarily taking the whole thing, getting the whole hog of trusteeship. The reason I say this is that trusteeship carries with it a tremendous power that one places in the hands of the federal government. The trust relationship, I feel, often implies disadvantages for the native people and native governments, and puts power in the hands of the federal government that can be a problem. It isn't always a problem, and some people may feel it's their best shot, but I thought I would offer that since it's been discussed. That, I think, concludes my remarks, except that I've had a strong sense that one thing that was mentioned by, a number of speakers, but I think that because Native people are able to assert and exercise inherent rights that the whole world perceives to be natural and just rights, that you have the power and the ability to assert rights even though they may not be technically, legally protectable. And so those kinds of rights have a particular kind of vitality that survive legal problems, that survive legal losses. But the one thing that they don't survive is you're voluntarily giving them up. And so one thing I'd like to conclude by saying that the law ain't everything. Don't let the law bother you overmuch. What's more important is that you hang on to and you assert the rights that are naturally yours, and I think you'll be all right. The law will catch up with you. Thank you. I'm sorry I've go on so long.
Browning and Sheldon and Reed, and then I think we'll have to adjourn. Yeah, Browning Pipestem.
I'll try to be brief because I'd like to get a more definitive statement, I guess, as to the, you know, I get the distinct impression that a number of people equate the category of tribal government or native government with that some kind of conjures up a notion of some kind of a primitive, offbeat, out of step kind of government that is unsuitable in the 20th century. I really believe that there are people who I hear speak that think that. Now, let me tell you what I do. I'm a business lawyer, is what I do. And it seems to me that the tribal governments in, gosh, I can't even hardly say that word, the lower 48. It's hard for my southern accent to say that word even. Have, I think, tremendous opportunities to have as sophisticated a form of government with the creativity of tribal legislatures to create the width and breadth for the room of all the broad range of kinds of native peoples that there are. Now, there are traditional people who say they don't like corporations. I don't know whether they do or not. There are people who are obviously in the business of running corporations and occupying those corporations. Yeah. I see no difficulty, for instance, let me give you some for instances, in if a tribe wanted to have a borough, why they could not create a borough under tribal legislation. I see no reason why a tribe who chose to create a municipality could not create a municipality for non-Indians over properties that they owned. I see no reason why a tribe who chose to have a corporation could not create a sophisticated set of corporate structures for its own people by virtue of tribal legislation. I see no reason why a tribe who desired to have a banking system could not create a banking system under the tribe's law. I see no reason why a tribe who chose to regulate the nature of oil and gas production under its own laws could not do so to the extent that it has subject matter jurisdiction. I see no reason why a creative application of the Alaska law would not be for the Alaska legislature to say that the proper place, if, now I'm making some assumptions, if the Alaska natives desired to be recognized as a people of a governmental nature, and I don't know that you do, but if you did, that a law of the Alaska legislature that says that the nature of the relationship between the state of Alaska and the people who are the native peoples is one of a government to a government. It would seem to me that this is a time for a quiet set of voices on these kinds of issues, because in my mind, I do not see a tribal government as a primitive, offbeat, out of step kind of a government. I see it as having the ability to create a width and breadth for the broadest range of people, and to do so on a very creative basis. Now, let me give you a notion of that, because somebody mentioned something about the pipe stem doctrine. The pipe stem doctrine, simply stated, I guess, if I get to state it myself, I've never needed an interpreter for a lot of years, but maybe I need one, is that you need, you know, I don't advocate the use of illegitimate power. If you don't have power, then I guess you need to get you some from somebody. If you have power, it is irrelevant if you don't exercise it. It does not make a bit of difference if you don't exercise it. And our people in the United States, people criticize the notion of the reservation system, it is just beginning to blossom. Because people are saying on a broad scale of legislation, if you want to create an Indian corporation in Oklahoma, you can do so through three tribes that I know of now. If you want to set up a professional corporation, I know of two tribes that you can create a professional corporation to practice law, to be a dentist, to be an architect, to be a whole lot of things. If you wish to be a whole series of activities, that is beginning to develop because the tribe is seeing itself as a sophisticated, in-step, moving force that is going to move its people, its abilities to function as a government, into a modern context. And I do believe that you can't have a greater level of accountability than to tribal government. And I would simply say to you that don't get the impression that when I say you need to settle the affair of the heart, that if you're just some old group of people prowling around somewhere and you're not legitimate, don't exercise any power, because you don't have any. But if you're a people who are a government, there is a tremendous opportunity for your government to serve its people. And that's not a funny thing. To function as a government is a practical, everyday, difficult undertaking, I believe. And I think that it means that, for instance, at present, is there really any native land? It's really owned by a state-chartered corporation, is it not? And the dormant native governments that are here, and I say dormant only because I don't know, seem to me to provide you with a great opportunity to do some significant things. And I would be a little chary of not finding out what the width and breadth of your legal parameters of what you can do prior to trying to seek out legislation. There may be many, many things that you can do. I would say to you that if 1991 is a problem, that the institution that you have here of the Native government, it does not have a fuse on it that goes out in 1991. It will continue. It goes beyond 1991. Its problem is it doesn't have any land. The Native corporations, if they were not really even Native corporations. You could form a Native corporation under the law of the Sac and Fox tribe tomorrow and create a Native corporation. Only we'd have to call you an Indian at that point, I guess. But I think that there are tremendous creative opportunities for you as a people to take what is clearly an undercurrent of significant and tremendous authority and power and economic. I mean, you have people that have achieved many things. And I would just say to you that the relationship between tribal government and the ANCSA corporations is one that's a dialogue that I think is tremendous, and that the corporation should not view, and you people who have dealings in tribal government should not view yourself as some kind of primitive fifth class, offbeat, out of step outfit, because that legislation can bring you into where you need to be at such time that you can make people to work. And I really understood what Byron was saying in that in the United States, and I don't know whether I guess you guys are in the United States, the problem has been is that the Indian Reorganization Act had two different aspects to it. One was the Section 16 organization, which was the constitutional government entity. The Section 17 entity was the tribe as a business corporation. And what was interesting about it was we ended up with the tribal council being in charge of both of them, and there were never any assignments of tribal assets to the tribal chartered corporate entity. And I think that some of the tribes are beginning to see the significance of that, of the insulation of business opportunities as they function through the tribe. And I think that that's a recent phenomenon. And I think that there's tremendous opportunity, and I'll just end with that because our chief over here may give me the gong.
Okay, thanks, Browning. Well, Sheldon and then Reed.
Right. I'm really very, very satisfied with the way that this afternoon's conversation has finally turned. Everybody has been clarifying and reaffirming what we have been saying. And Byron, I'm very, very glad that the corporate people that have been representing us, have been taking care of business for us, are realizing that we all in fact, have the same goal at the end. That's one of the things that I would like to emphasize is that one of the problems that the corporations have with regard to taking care of business is the fact that they must keep their shareholders informed. That puts them at a disadvantage, as you said, in dealing with other corporations which have no such requirements. If in fact you are going to take care of business and make a profit, then you must be able to maintain a certain level of secrecy with regard to what direction you and your for-profit corporation are going. It's a matter of business which the corporate community of the United States, not just of Alaska, that is one of their basic tenets of how they operate. So HIO doesn't tell everybody and their shareholders what they are planning on doing. They do it and then they inform their shareholders. And I think that anything that we would do as tribal governments with regard to saying to the corporate leaders, you led us astray, therefore we do not want you around anymore, would be wrong. You have developed a very great expertise with regard to businesses and business corporations, and we need all the help we can get. I think that one of the things that we as tribal governments can do is to say to the corporations, tribal governments will take care of social and welfare problems. Your function, and we want you to do the best that you can, is to get out there and make a profit, not just for the corporation, but your shareholders. You have to concentrate on business, and you have to be able to maintain a certain level of secrecy with regard to what you're planning to do as, to make a profit. And I think I would like to conclude by commending Mr. Coulter for some of the conditions which must be met before any solution can be satisfactorily and constructively put in place to the satisfaction of all people. And I would hope that the commission would make sure that these are in your recommendations. And I would also commend him on his mention of the fact that we do in fact have a wide variety of options available on the shelf. But first of all, and I think it behooves us all to realize this, that the premise that we must start with are written in the Act of 1971 under Declaration of Policy. Section 2, Part C, no provision of this Act shall relieve, replace, or diminish any obligation of the United States or of the State of Alaska to protect and promote the rights or welfare of natives. If that's not reaffirmation of trust responsibility, I don't know what is. And as far as tribal governments, this one here has been staring me in the face and hitting me over the head, just like my Eskimo name, Gaukutuk, hammer. It's hit me so hard that I don't know what in the world it's telling me. And I think this is one of the things that we as tribal governments have to realize is Section F. No provision of this Act shall be construed to constitute a jurisdictional act. Therefore, we as tribal governments have no limitation, as I said earlier, to our jurisdiction. There is nothing in the state, there is nothing in the federal government that says there is a limitation. The only limitation that we as tribal governments have is those that we have imposed on ourselves, and these are the ones that we have abided by since time immemorial, our traditional tribal boundaries. And as far as alternatives, tribal governments are there. The Act, there is nothing in the Act that says that the governments, and that has been one of the problems of native governments, is that they have viewed ANCSA as deprivation of jurisdiction on tribal governments. It's not there. And that is an assumption which we have to turn around. When I was in electronics school, I had an instructor from the Marine Corps who made it very clear to me about the word assume. You take it apart. Anytime you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. So don't assume these things. Go by the letter of the law. ANCSA is not a jurisdictional act, and therefore, we have no limits to our jurisdiction but those which we have abided by since time immemorial, our traditional tribal boundaries. Thank you.
Reed Chambers, we'll let you carry on until they come and start folding the tables up.
No, I actually just they may fold me up with them, Tom. I had just two questions for Byron, actually, if he had any reaction to this, which would be, I know, of course, you don't speak for every corporation or every regional corporation. Do you have any feeling for what the regional corporations would feel, though, about legislation that would do either or both of these two things? Number one, simply extend the period in which people could not sell their stock for, let's say, 20 more years. And number two, would in some way affirmatively recognize or confirm what I think is the pre-existing power, but in any event would confirm a power in village governments in Alaska to regulate the use and regulate activities by people on lands proximate to the villages that are owned either by a village or a regional corporation.
With respect to the first question, it has been largely the regional corporation leadership that has advanced the notion that if we must do anything with the timing of 1991, let's turn it on its head. That is, let's leave native stock inalienable unless the membership makes the determination that it ought to be as an option. With respect to the latter, I have to speak personally, but I believe very strongly that there has to be achieved an accommodation between native corporations and their tribe, however that is defined, so that the land is maintained and protected for the longest possible period of time in native ownership.
Thank you, Byron. I'm going to give myself the last word because we've only got a couple of minutes. Just let me repeat that there is a reception in honor of the Alaska Native Review Commission at the offices of Zeonce Pertl, that's David Case's office, 550 West 7th, Suite 1380, and all roundtable participants and people out there, observers, are invited. That's 5 o'clock tonight. The other thing I wanted to say was that we'll start again at 9:30 in the morning. I know some of you have to leave tonight, and I'm grateful to you for coming. Might I just mention a couple of thoughts that perhaps deserve to be considered? We might consider them tomorrow. One is Charles Wilkinson, who is the lawyer for the Menominees, said that what Congress did there was they passed a law that said there had to be negotiations to sort out the mess. And it took a few years, but the state and the Menominees and the tribe and the corporation all got together and sorted it out. And I've forgotten what happened then. I'm not even sure that any legislation was passed, but it's a kind of an interesting example of how to go about it. A second approach is the one the AFN is taking, I believe, which is to have some resolutions considered statewide by Native people, and then to invite Congress to legislate to solve the problem, so to speak. And that may be the way it's got to be done. I don't know. A third possibility is the one that Peter Gell mentioned, the one that they're using in northern Canada, where they are working out new forms of political authority, working out land claims, so they've established a constitutional forum. And the territorial legislature nominates people to it, the native people nominate people to it, and it goes around the territory listening to what people have to say, and it's trying to develop a consensus. Now, maybe this is all pie in the sky, but I think it's worth perhaps reflecting on. Well, tomorrow we'll start at 9:30, and I hope you'll return. And those of you that didn't get a chance to speak, I do hope we can give you that opportunity tomorrow. And I hope that you will feel free, especially those of you who've come from far off and won't be back again, to give some parting thoughts, if indeed parting shots, and to say what you think this commission ought to recommend. I'll be here at 9:30, and I'll welcome you all at that time. So we'll stand adjourned.